This is a Pinball News production.
Thank you. We're going to talk today about innovations in pinball and how we can move the industry forward with innovations. And I want to start with a little movie that we made public very recently. So the purpose of the video clearly was to suggest that we at Multimorphic are innovating where in the last so many years there haven't been a lot of innovations. And we want to talk about those. We want to talk about how we can use the innovations that we've put into our products, the P3 and some of our other products, to move the entire industry forward. So what do we mean by innovation? Very simply, innovation is or are new ideas, new methods, new devices. And innovations can be big. They can be really industry-changing ideas, or they can be very little. They can be, you know, a little new mechanism that does something differently than has been done before. I personally am interested in talking about big innovations, industry-moving innovations, things we can do in the pinball industry to break us out of the stagnation that we've been seeing for the last decade or two, and do new things, bring new people into pinball, introduce new gameplay mechanisms and things that we can do to get more people interested in pinball. So why should you listen to me talk about this? Who am I? Well, the simple truth is I'm a guy who likes to innovate, and that's pretty much it. I've worked for some high-tech companies. I've worked for National Instruments, Cisco Systems, Tipping Point Technologies, always working on bleeding-edge products to drive industries forward. Done industrial automation, manufacturing controls, done networking devices, hardware-based security algorithms, hardware-based image processing. And in every, I feel like I've been lucky enough in every single job I've had to work on new product development and to bring in new technologies to drive industries forward. So then about 5 years ago, I decided to merge a hobby of mine, which is pinball, with my desire to innovate and figure out ways to introduce new innovations and drive this industry forward. This is my favorite slide. I spend a lot of time on it every year. And I pose to you guys, every year I do it, and I'll do it again this year, what innovations, what big industry-changing innovations have we seen in the last 15 years, 14 years, since the year 2000. What have we seen in the last 14 years that have changed the industry? Lights. Anybody else? Prices. Prices have driven the industry forward. Mods. So yes, mods for sure are innovative. Every mod is an innovation. It's a little innovation that makes an experience different or better for the people making them. Lights, I don't know if I'd say lights are an innovation. We've had lights in pinball for many years. We've changed them a little bit. We've changed from single color incandescent light bulbs to first to straight up single color RGB. I'm sorry, single color LEDs, and then to RGB, three color LEDs, where you can merge the colors and create different effects. Certainly, displays have changed. Right, we changed from alphanumeric, then we went to dot matrix display, and now we're doing LCDs. Of course, that's just really a resolution change. So in my opinion, none of the things mentioned have moved the industry forward. If we didn't have new lights, we'd still be enjoying new pinball games, but they'd still look pretty much the same, maybe not quite as fancy, maybe not quite as flashy. I may be biased, but I feel like there's been one single innovation in pinball in the last 14 years that has totally changed the entire industry. And it's this. It's this board. This is a P-Rock board. I designed it 5 years ago to give people a way to create new machines or to breathe life into their old machines. 4 years ago, I was here. I held it up just like I held it now. And I said, this is a P-Rock board. It's a new board. We showed a video of, strangely, the Dutch pinball guys who were doing a project on Bride of Pinbot 2 with a P-Rock. Before the P-Rock existed, there was one P- pinball company in the country, in the world, on the planet, whatever it is they say. One pinball company existed. Of course, it was Stern Pinball. There was no one building boutique games. There were a couple people building custom games, single individual custom games. They all built their control systems from scratch, custom control systems. So they would pull out their circuit boards and their soldering irons and wire up circuits to control their games. When we introduced this board, we gave people a way to create new pinball machines. And look what's happened in the last 5 years. Before there was one company, now there are literally 200 to 300 people building custom pinball machines. We don't see a lot of them. A lot of them are just doing it for their own enjoyment, building them in their houses and enjoying them themselves. At Expo last year, we were here. We set up a booth where we had 12 different custom games with P-Rock boards in them. This year, there are a couple dozen new companies offering pinball machines, many of them based around the P-Rock board. And there are, I said a couple dozen, there are a few here. There are a lot more that I've talked to in private emails who are building or planning to build pinball machines. There are here in the exhibit hall or in the game room, there are literally 20 plus machines with the P-Rock board in them. Some of them are in our booth, some of them are in the game room, some of them are in other booths. I think the Big Lebowski was announced. They had a presentation last night. They're using our boards. The Predator's using our boards. There are a couple other new machines using our boards. But literally, this board has driven the industry forward. And the question is, as I leave the blank slide and don't put up my cool P-Rock slide, we'll just skip right over that. Why aren't more people innovating? They're not innovating because innovating is challenging. There are lots of challenges we all have to overcome when we innovate. Time and money is a huge one. I think they say that traditional pinball companies spend about $1 million designing a new game. That's a new game on an existing platform with an existing cabinet, with an existing control system, with a existing flipper mix and slingshot mix and all that stuff. What they're talking about is spending $1 million on a theme, on creating new playfield layout for their theme, creating artwork, creating, you know, sound and video and dots and all those things. $1 million to do that. We're building a brand new everything. The machine, we're going to dive into this machine in a little bit. This is the P3. For those of you who haven't heard of it before, it's our take on what pinball should be like in the future. Hopefully that future's starting now. But yes, we have to create that game. We have to show, and the first game we're showing is Lexi Lightspeed Galaxy Girl. We have to create that game. We have to spend all that money to create something that you all enjoy, the artwork, the playfield layout, all that stuff. But in addition to that, we're creating everything else in the machine. It's a new type of cabinet. It's a new type of under playfield everything. It's a new control system. So take that $1 million and add it to whatever it is we can spend or have to spend on everything else. And it adds up very quickly. And of course, there's time. This machine, we brought a concept machine here 2 years ago. It was just a very simple demonstration of some of the ideas we were thinking about putting into it. Last year we brought basically a mechanical sample, a prototype, where all the mechs were in place. There was a half of a game in place. It wasn't playable. And then this year we brought a fully playable Lexi Lightspeed game. It's 75% to 80% complete. It's all the artwork's finished. The playfield has artwork. The graphics, everything else is in place. And now it's a game you can enjoy. It's taken 2 years to get there. It takes a lot of time, a lot of money. The interesting thing about pinball is we're not an industry where there's this hockey stick growth potential that investors are really interested in. So we can't go and, you know, go to a venture capitalist and say, listen, we need $1 million or $2, and in 4 or 5 years we think we can grow your business, our business, up to whatever it is they're looking for, $50 million, $100 million. $1 billion. They're all looking for that hockey stick growth potential. We don't have that in pinball. So we don't have the luxury of going to these various venture capitalists and asking for money. So all of the money it takes to build this comes basically from us. We build these products out of our passion for pinball and our desire to move the industry forward. We have about 10 people working for us who are working on this machine. Many of us are working full-time for free. Some of us are working nights and weekends. But everybody is committed to the vision and is committed to helping move pinball forward. And those are some of the sacrifices that startups in the industry have to make. That's why a lot of people aren't innovating in pinball. It's expensive, it takes time, and these things translate to risk. There's personal financial risk, there's business financial risk, there's the time that we could be spending, you know, building our careers in other areas. There's unconstructive criticism. This one's interesting to me now because it's fairly common now to go to online forums and read things about your products. And all innovators open themselves up to criticism. And don't get me wrong, constructive criticism is fantastic. That's what we look for. We like showing our products and getting people to respond to them. If they like them, great. Tell us why you like them. If you don't like them, that's fine too. Tell us what you don't like and why you don't like it. In fact, we named our company based on our desire to get constructive feedback. Multimorphic. We take our products, we morph them as often as necessary in response to customer feedback to create products that you all will enjoy. Unconstructive criticism, on the other hand, is criticism that people post where it's just, you know, I tried product XYZ out and it sucked. Okay, great. Sorry you feel that way, but how does that help us? In fact, it doesn't help us, and in fact, we have to spend more time and more money to overcome the negative impressions people get by reading comments that are just completely unconstructive. It's just an unfortunate reality in the internet today. Everyone has to deal with that. New innovators have to deal with that, and a lot of startups are stopped right when they release a product because of people online just saying, I don't even want to try that product because it doesn't look like it's fun or it doesn't look like it's going to do anything that I want to be a part of. So that's a challenge innovators have to overcome. The last one, contentment. People are generally content with the way things are. Every single innovation in the history of the world, there were probably people that said, well, I don't need a TV, I don't need an air conditioner, I don't need an automatic transmission, I'm happy with things the way they are. So they're unlikely to give the new thing a chance until a lot of people try it out and tell them it's cool. Hey, you need to check out this thing, it's called a television. You can sit on your couch and watch entertainment, and it's pretty cool. I don't need that. Why would I want to sit on my couch and do nothing and watch other people act out fake situations? Well, look at television now. A silly example, but the point is that innovators who are coming up with new ideas have to deal with people who aren't interested in seeing them. So it's another obstacle we have to overcome. So the question, given all these challenges with innovations, why should people innovate? And they should innovate to solve problems and to create better experiences for their potential customers. And so I pose you another question. Are you happy with... Actually, I'll stop there. Is anyone here happy? I don't... Okay, so we got some smiles. So some people are a little happy. Are you happy with pinball? Are you happy with the pinball industry? Let me get a show of hands. Are you happy with the pinball industry today? About half the room put their hand up. So of those people who put your hands up, are you happy spending $7,000, $8,000, $9,000, $10,000 on new pinball machines? Show of hands, please. Got two hands that are up. Of those of you who had your hands up before, how many of you are happy that you can't buy all the machines you want to buy because you can't fit them in your house? We got a couple more hands. It's probably your wives that are happy, but. Of those of you who had your hand up before, those of you who are content with the industry, how many of you are happy that locations aren't putting a lot of pinball machines out because they're so hard to service? Does that make you happy? All right, we found one that no one thought was a good thing. In my opinion, the pinball industry is broken. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff happening. There's a lot of people coming out and building new machines. But they're not building new machines that are solving any of the major issues that are a problem for pinball. And there are a lot of areas that have problems. We just talked about a couple of them. We talked about price and value. We talked about environment, which I'm calling, you know, the floor space issue, not being able to fit games in your house. We talked about serviceability. There are problems in each of these areas that affect the pinball industry. And what I want to do is show you our machine. I want to demonstrate a lot of it for you and show you how this machine, the P3, is addressing a lot of these problems. And can we switch? Anybody know how to switch the projector over? Thank you. Okay, you'll have to excuse the sideways image. We have our projector set up in the exhibit hall, and we have a monitor that's rotated 90 degrees. So this is the P3. It's showing Lexi Lightspeed Galaxy Girl, which is the first game for this P3. The first thing you probably notice is it looks a little bit different. The P3, instead of a painted piece of wood in the playfield, has an LCD monitor. It's a 32-inch LCD monitor. It looks enormous. It looks like we've taken the entire two-thirds lower portion of the playfield and converted it to a digital display. And it looks like that because that's exactly what we did. And most people, when they see it, they're like, well, that's not cool because you just took away most of the physicality of pinball. You took away a lot of mechanisms and things that we're used to seeing in the lower two-thirds of the playfield. Dennis Nordman, who designed our first game, he designed the Lexi Lightspeed concept and playfield layout. He told me the same thing. He said, I can't design a game for this machine because the lower two-thirds of the playfield, I need that space. I need to put mechanical mechanisms. And I asked him to compare the playfield layout with that two-thirds of LCD, compare it to his existing layouts, and tell me how many features he wouldn't be able to put on this game if he were designing one of his previous games for this machine. He sent me an image that had an outline of this playfield, and it had an outline of three of his popular games, and every single one of them had mechanisms start right here, two-thirds up the playfield. He could have designed every single one of the games he picked as examples, the ones he picked to disprove the possibilities of this machine, and every single one of them had mechanisms start in the, just exist in the upper third of the playfield. There's a perception when you see this big LCD, because it looks different than you're used to. It looks like it's taking away all the space. In reality, it's just converting that traditional painted piece of wood to something that's dynamic. And let me show you how a dynamic lower playfield can enrich your pinball experience. Okay, so the first thing you see is that we tried to, on this first game, we tried to develop a semi-traditional pinball experience. We tried to develop a mostly static playfield with blinking insert lamps showing you what to shoot. So we have, well, you can't really see our upper playfield now because the lights are too dark, but it might be the camera. You might not be able to pick them up anyway. But so for those of you who haven't seen the machine before, and actually for all of you, we'll have it set up. We have it set up in the exhibit hall, so please come by and check it out, and we can show you specifically these things in person. No thanks. It's okay, Gary. Thanks. So the playfield is showing you what to shoot. You'll notice in the bottom near the flippers, there's we call it an apron LCD. Basically, we've taken the area that's traditionally an apron, and we drew stuff on the LCD in that area. So while you're playing the game, you know, most people are looking at the flippers trying to keep the ball alive. They don't see what's going on in a back box, seeing what's up there on a display. They see only what's right in front of their eyes on that playfield. So we put all the information you need, the score, the ball number, the player number. There's some other things that show up there as you progress towards the end goal in the game, and it shows you your progress through the game. As we shoot shots, for example, when I shoot this shot, the left ramp shot that's saying alien attack right now, an alien attack starts. We show you on the screen what's happening. We now change. There's a center chevron arrow set that's now lit, showing you now to shoot for the center thing. We have text associated with these things. You can see in the right corner of the playfield, the bottom right, it says start mode. And we have blinking light lock characters on the two sides of the screen. There are physical targets on each side of the LCD that we use to light lock. Shoot that. Now we have a yellow chevron stack saying lock lit one. So we can lock our first ball into the game by now by shooting that shot. I should have mentioned, because you can't really see it on the screen, that the entire upper third of the playfield is a traditional physical layout. There's a physical ball lock. It's one of the coolest ball locks I've ever seen in a pinball game. It's an 8-ball physical ball lock. We just lit it. I'll show you how it works in a second. There's 2 ramps, there's 3 pop bumpers, there's 17 stand-up targets, there's 7 different scoops, 7 different scoops, there's 2 vertical up kickers, there's 6 drop targets. There are more features in this game than most games. There are more physical features in this game than most machines you'll see out there. And then we also have this dynamic display. We can shoot the lock now. It goes into the spaceship, it gives us another ball which just drained, and we get an end of ball summary on the screen. It gives us our bonus. That's the mode that's active when no other thing is going on in the game. We call it our static map scene. It's basically a map of the area that the game takes place in, the theme takes place. If we start a mode, just started the cabin mode. It zoomed into the map and it became this dynamic effect, and we totally changed the playfield artwork in the lower portion of the playfield. That painted piece of wood you see in a traditional playfield clearly can't do anything like that. We've now changed the whole playing experience, and we've given you an entirely new set of things to shoot for. In this scene, there's a stack of dirty, broken ship parts behind the characters, and our goal in the mode is to fix them. We have a label that's telling us to shoot the ship to select a part. You see a part jump on the screen. If I touch that part with the ball, it gets fixed. The display is not just a dynamic display. It's actually a touchscreen display that tracks the location of the ball as it's rolling around the screen. So the entire lower portion of the game is a huge set of 2 million RGB lit rollover targets. No matter where the ball is, it's rolling over a target of some sort that we can track, and we can do things based on the position of the ball. We can assemble the part, it moves to the floor, and then we can go to the next part. And we can progress through the modes. That's probably enough of a demo of the actual playability. What we've tried to do is give people a new way to interact with machines that didn't change the physical playing experience in pinball that we all love, but it enhances that experience by giving us the ability to change the lower portion, the graphics, and to give you more information while you're playing the game. So we believe we've addressed the playability stagnation in the industry. Games that you buy today from other vendors are all based on 20 or 30 year old gameplay techniques. You're playing a game that comes out to, in fact, one of the most exciting things that happened in the industry happened last year when they announced they're going to remake a 17 year old game. And they had, they probably pre-sold all 1,000 of their machines immediately because there was a huge line of people in the seminar room that ran up to go buy a 20 year old, 17 year old game. So if that's not an indication that the industry has stagnated for a very long time, I don't know what would be. We are trying to introduce new technologies, not just for the sake of introducing them, but to give people a more enriched playing experience. So we believe we've addressed playability. Let's talk about price per game. That $7,000, $8,000, $10,000 per game that other vendors are charging. I said Lexi Lightspeed was the first game we're making for this machine. The reason I said that is because this is a multi-game platform. It's a multi-game physical pinball platform. the upper third portion of the game, that physical shot layout with the ramps, the loops, the targets, all that stuff, is literally a module we can pull out of the machine. We can drop in any other playfield layout. Somebody else wants to design a playfield layout, we can drop it in the game. Last year I was here, and I said the same thing on our early prototypes. And I said we can change out the playfield in less than a minute. Because people are used to the traditional, the Pinball 2000 experience or whatever, where it takes a little while, 5 or 10 minutes, to switch out a game completely. I'm not going to do it again today. It's basically the same thing. But it took us 20 seconds to pull the playfield out. It took us 20 seconds to put a playfield in. And it took the machine a couple seconds to boot up. So under a minute, you can completely change your game. Of course, the lower portion of the playfield is this dynamic thing. So we can totally change the playfield artwork, what the game looks like, the theme that's being played. We can totally change the experience. So, yes, the machine itself is expensive. It costs $7,000, $8,000, $9,000. We don't have the exact price point laid out yet, but it's going to be somewhat expensive. There's a reason games are coming out for that kind of money, especially from the startups. The people who are spending that time and money I identified earlier, it's expensive to build new pinball machines. It's expensive to build a whole subsystem, a whole cabinet control system, so your software frameworks, and to do all that stuff. So the machine itself is expensive, but once you've spent that money on the machine, you own it. You have a cabinet. You have flipper mechanisms. You have all of the stuff that it takes to build a game, and then you can just drop in new versions of the fun stuff, new games. It's kind of like the video game model, where you don't spend $250, $300, $400 on EA Sports Hockey or whatever game it is. You spend that $250 or $300 or $400 on a machine, and then you spend a lot less money for individual games that go into the machine. And that's the model we're going for. So upper playfield changes, lower playfield changes. We've addressed the price per game problem. We've addressed the floor space problem, because clearly if you only have one machine going into your house and you're adding games to it, you don't need to find space in the rest of your house to put these games. You don't need to clear out bedrooms. You don't need to sleep under your pinball machines because you've filled up your bedroom with games. You buy one machine. Yes, you have to find space to stack up, because they'll be stackable, all of the play fields that you have, all of the 5 or 6 or 10 games that you bought to play in this thing. You have to find space for them. They can stack up in the corner of a room, or maybe you need space for two games. One space for the machine, and one space for storing all of your secondary games. We've addressed the gameplay. We've addressed the price per game value. We've addressed the floor space issue. Let's talk about aesthetics. Because if you go on any pinball forum these days and read a post about any new machine that's coming out, you're going to see people talking about artwork. Right? Artwork is a big part of pinball. People want their machines to look like pieces of art. That's just a fact in the industry. And everybody has an opinion on art. Some people love the new artwork that came out for a certain game, and some people don't. In fact, one thing that's happening a lot lately is people take the images that the companies post, and they go into Photoshop and they change them. This is what I would do if I were developing artwork for this game. And those people don't want to buy the existing game because they don't like the artwork, but they say they would buy it if the artwork looked like they can make it. And that's really bad for manufacturers. It puts a lot of pressure on the artists. It puts a lot of pressure on the people making the games, because if you don't make a game that looks like people want it to look, they're not going to buy it. And we believe we solved that problem too. So the artwork on this machine is swappable. Every single panel on the machine has artwork that literally comes right off the machine. These are basically car magnets. So you go to a local print shop, you pay them $150, and you get four decals. You get two side decals, you get the two top decals. If you're a skilled artist and you don't want to buy a game because it doesn't have artwork that you like, but you can make better artwork, make it. You saw me pull it off. It took 2 seconds to pull it off. It takes another 2 seconds or 5 seconds to put it on. And within 30 seconds, you can totally change the way your cabinet looks. Artwork should not be the reason you buy or don't buy a game. You can make a machine look like you want it to look like. If you own a company, say you own Coca-Cola, and you're probably not here playing pinball games, you're probably somewhere on a beach, but you can build games that represent your brand. You can very quickly change out your artwork to represent your brand. Okay, so most of us don't own Coca-Cola, but most of us like playing pinball. So we want a game in our game rooms that say, you know, Johnny's Arcade or whatever it is you want to put on your game. It's very easy to do that. And if you are a skilled artist and can create artwork for games, you have a market to sell to now. Everyone who owns this machine is a potential customer for you. So you don't have to make artwork a decision when you buy a game. Buy the game. If you don't like the artwork, and you convince other people that don't like the artwork to not like the artwork, then maybe you have a potential group of people who can get together and create new artwork. If we like that artwork that we're not shipping with our game, the artwork that you've created, maybe we'll license it back from you and we'll sell it as part of the game. We've slightly changed the pinball business paradigm. We've addressed the gameplay. We've addressed the price per game. We've addressed the floor space issue. We've addressed the aesthetics. This machine, by the way, you probably can't see it most of you from where you're looking, where you're sitting, but the entire cabinet is framed like you would frame a picture. When you put a picture on your wall, you don't just slap a piece of picture, or a piece of paper, or a photo onto your wall. You frame it because that frame draws out the image. It makes it look a lot more impressive. Look at the other pinball machines in the game room, and every single one of them has artwork just slapped onto a piece of wood that goes all the way to the edges. We've framed our artwork. The artwork is inset into the cabinet so that it looks more dynamic. It looks more interesting. And I personally feel like this machine looks better with artwork installed than other machines simply because of that frame, simply because it highlights the artwork that people have spent so much time and effort creating. So we've addressed the aesthetics. The other thing I want to talk about is the business operation in pinball. Because today, all these companies that we talked about before are building new machines. They're building new machines. They're building new cabinets. They're building new game infrastructures. They're building new control systems. They're building everything with the machine. And they're spending a lot of money to do it, and then they're charging you the $7,000, $8,000, $9,000, $10,000 per game. They don't have to do that anymore. If any of you are interested in building a game, you don't have to build everything anymore. We've done the work for you. This is an open platform system. It's open source software, but more importantly, it's open platform. What that means is we've created a machine that anybody can create games for. If you have an idea for a game and you have the talent to, you know, lay out a play field and maybe get some friends to help you do whatever they're skilled at doing, artwork or programming or whatever it is, you can literally create a game for the system. We are documenting, we will release this early next year hopefully, the mechanical specs for the play field, the upper portion of the play field where you can design this. It's basically a 2x2 square area where the upper portion of the play field has all the physical shots. That's the area you're designing the physical stuff into. The control system is our PROC control system, so it's something that we've already, you know, it's already out there. People are comfortable with it. It's got a lot of open source support, a lot of community behind it. You can create your own game. Our goal is to convince other people to make games for this, because once this machine is out in people's homes, every game designer has an installed customer base that's going to be interested in buying new games for it. And that's where they get to take advantage of that price per game value. If you have the machine, and someone comes out and says, say Dennis Nordman, because he designed this game, if he designed another game, you could have another Dennis Nordman brand new in box pinball game for $1,500 or $2,000 or whatever it costs for that game upgrade. You're not paying $8,000 per game anymore. Now you're paying $2,000 for a new game, and you're not taking up more space in your house and all those points that we addressed earlier. We want people to build games for this. We want to give you, the customer, the opportunity to experience a physical game console setup like those video games. You buy that console, the video game console, you stick it in your entertainment center, and it's there. You own it. Then you can just buy games and update your system. So that's all the material I planned. I want to take questions now. Question is, the back box display, is it just a translate up there, or what would you do if you were designing your own game for that? Yes, it's just a standard translate. I think I paid $40 to get that translate printed. So it's a standard thing. Same translate that are going in most games. It's the same size as an old Williams or Stern translate too. Yes?
The big thing at the CES this year was glasses was 3D. Now, all the panels coming out are landscape and not portrait, but shouldn't they come out with portrait glasses was 3D? Would that be an option? Do you have sufficient processing power to deal with 3D?
The question is, at CES this year, there was a lot of focus put on 3D displays, and specifically glassless, ones where you don't have to wear the glasses to see 3D effects on the displays. Is that an option for this machine? I should have talked about serviceability. I didn't talk about serviceability. I skipped over that. And I can talk about it briefly in a minute. But to answer your question, the display on this game literally just pulls out of the machine. If we lifted this up, let me lift it up. So the playfield's out in service position. We have a front panel. We can drop the front panel down, and we can literally take that display and slide it right out. Just like this is the playfield. This is a piece of plastic that covers our LCD monitor. Think about how hard it is to clean a traditional machine. A couple people are laughing. How long does it take to clean a traditional playfield? Hours, because you have to basically disassemble all the components that are on top of it. With our machine, 5 seconds, you pull the playfield out, you grab your Novus 2 and a rag, and you wipe it down, you slide it right back in. This is the flipper assembly. It's got flippers, it's got slingshots, it's got all the mechanical devices that make up the lower portion of the game. My point, I am going to answer your question, I promise. You reminded me that I forgot to talk about serviceability. If you have a problem with your flippers, you don't want to service them. You don't want to, grab all your tools and try to manipulate things under the playfield with the playfield propped up or whatever it is. You just pull it out and go work on it in your workshop or on your couch, or send it back to us or your distributor and get a new one. Serviceability is significantly improved with this game. Every single assembly on the machine is a module that you can just pull out of the machine. Displays. The display will now just come out. I could drop in a 3D display. Of course, to make use of that 3D display, you need programming that shows graphics in the way that you would want to see them to enjoy a 3D experience. So technically, yes, it's very easy to do 3D on here. The risk to a company like us is the time and money it takes to develop the content for that type of display. And as soon as there are people clamoring for 3D graphics on their pinball machines, we'll be there to make them for them. Until then, we want to give people a cheaper price per game value. Right, if we were developing the 3D content, that's going to bump up the price just because of the time and the money it takes to develop the content. But yes, it's certainly possible. You brought up a point about the computer system we have in the game and if we have enough horsepower to drive the machine or to drive a 3D display. And that's always a challenge in a multi-game kind of setup. What's interesting about the PROC system is you can upgrade your PC and not worry about the control system on your game, because it's just a USB card that talks back to your computer that connects to any software running on any operating system. We're running a Linux system in this machine. But if, for example, in 5 years or 10 years down the road, 3D is the thing and people want a 3D display in their pinball machine, and if they can't run the software because the PC that's in there isn't popular or isn't powerful enough, you just pull the PC out too, stick a new PC in, the PROC will talk right to it, and you have a whole new engine in your game. So whether or not the PC that's in there now can drive a 3D display in the content that you want to see in a 3D-based game doesn't matter, because we can very easily upgrade the machine to get there. So maybe the upgrade kit for that 3D game comes with a new display. Why stop at 3D? Let's go for 4K 3D or something. But it would come with maybe a display, the game, and perhaps an upgraded PC to drive it. I don't know the answer to, does our current system drive a 3D a game with the content? It depends on the content, but we haven't developed one, so I can't answer the question. Yes, please.
Why is the back box the size that it is?
Why is the back box the size that it is? We originally had no back box on our prototypes. Our early games, because we don't have that configuration of boards that traditional games have up there, so we didn't need a back box. We brought out a machine that had no back box, and people basically didn't even want to look at it. They kind of walked right by it. It kind of looked like a trophy case or something, a weird machine without a back box. Some people thought it was cool. I think it was cool because you can put it in your house, and without this big back box, it doesn't take up, or it doesn't appear to take up nearly as much space in your house, but it didn't look like a pinball machine. So we designed a back box back onto it, and we modeled it after traditional pinball back boxes. It's generally the same size as a Williams back box. It's aesthetic, and we wanted it also to fit in aesthetically with other games in your game room or on location. We wanted it to look like... We've changed a lot of stuff. Everything we've talked about is new development. We wanted it to not also give people aesthetic reasons to unconstructively criticize it on the forums. Again, yes?
Looking at it from an operator standpoint, which I am not, you've addressed some of the issues that operators have. Serviceability, price per game, if you want to consider the swap outs, and getting new games into an operator's environment. Have you spoken to operators, and what's their reception?
The question is, essentially, have we spoken to operators, and are they interested in the machine? We've spoken to operators, we've spoken to consumers, we've spoken to everyone who is willing to speak with us about the game. Business folks and other playfield designers and everyone else. Operators are generally concerned. Are there operators in the room? Show hands again. How many people operate machines? Okay, so just a couple. Every operator I've talked to so far, the question they always ask is, they're not so much worried about the price and the gameplay and all that stuff. Their biggest concern these days is serviceability. Serviceability, is that the problem? Okay, so all of this stuff I just demoed for you is addressing the serviceability. We don't want people, technicians, to go out on location and have to spend hours in front of a machine trying to diagnose stuff. We want people, in the worst case where something very bad is broken, we want them to be able to just pull it out of the machine very quickly and get it swapped and get it back in operation so other people can enjoy it. And they can fix things in their labs or in their, you know, in their shops or whatever it is they need to fix it. They don't need a skilled technician to go out and take the things out of the game, that's true. So the biggest feedback from operators is address the serviceability, and we believe we've done that. Proof is in the pudding. We need to get games out there and have people experience them. Question over here, please.
So following up on that, can you talk a little bit more about this flipper assembly? Is the number of solenoids on there fixed? Is it intended to be the same on every game? Have us spares, potentially, if you're an operator, and just bring one with you in the truck, and if there's something wrong, swap it out, because they're always the same on every game design?
The question is specifically about the flipper assembly. Is this the setup of flippers that we will have on the game? If you swap it out, are you always going to swap it out with the same thing? This particular one, which, by the way, it looks so weird because it's floating over top of that LCD monitor. So every physical mechanism that's down in that lower two-thirds of the playfield is floating above the surface of the display. That's why this looks so weird. It's essentially a traditional flipper mech, just instead of the lower being underneath the playfield, it's over top of the playfield. I don't know the specific answer to your question. This is what we're going to ship with our first set or generation of machines. If people want us to design a setup with a kickback mechanism or with some crazy flipper setup, then it's just another module that will get shipped with your game. If someone wants to design a game that requires, I don't know, four flippers, thank you, four flippers or something, then we design a mechanism that has four flippers on it. If it doesn't need slingshots, or if it needs more slingshots or different configuration of slingshots, then we design one. And because it slides right in, it's not a big deal to switch them out.
Do you have extra pins on the plug? Is that something that would also be...
The question is, are there extra pins on the plug? This is our wiring harness in the machine. It's a single run of 15 wires. It's got power, it's got ground, and it's got our communication channels that talk to all of our sub-assemblies. It's not that I don't know how many different pieces of wire going off in different ways, like on a traditional wiring harness. So if something happens on your traditional game, getting that wiring harness replaced is a big deal. On this one, if really a wire gets cut or something accidentally, then it's just a straight run of 15 wires. The connectors on both sides of those are just standard 15-pin Molex connectors. So creating your own is very easy. The point is that every single module on this machine plugs into this harness with the exact same connector. So we could come, and the reason for that is because our control system's so modular, we can put the controller boards on the devices that are going in the machine, the modules that are going in the machine, and those modules can just connect back to this harness, and we can put any number of features on those devices. So yes, we can create different configurations without swapping out the wiring setup on the machines. Yes?
Have you addressed remote diagnostics?
Have we addressed remote diagnostics? We have a computer in the machine. The computer does have networking ports. It's actually using them on this game. Remote diagnostics is just a software implementation of a feature. So for us, it's more important at this point to get the game out, and then we will start adding features like that. Yes, remote diagnostics, remote statistics tracking, games that interface to each other are all things that we've discussed in public forums doing. And there are things on our roadmap that we intend to do. So, yes.
James, do you have a development kit and framework for the graphics?
The question is, do we have a software development kit for doing all of the software, the graphics and all those things? And the answer is, we do. We use it internally. We haven't published it yet, but we will, hopefully early next year. And it's not just a framework for your code. It's actually a complete simulator for the game. You can actually, I could demo it if I had more time. We can pull up a simulation. You can actually see on your computer screen exactly basically what you're looking at here. You can drag the ball around the thing with your mouse to see how it interacts with the graphics. You can do all this on your PC. You don't even need the machine to do it. Yes, we will be releasing a development kit that has all the low-level libraries that we need to interface to the hardware to do the standard things that the machine needs to do. And the programmer for those games gets to do the fun stuff, gets to create the game rules for their game. They don't have to deal with the infrastructure. They don't have to deal with any of the difficult things that we've already worked out for all that stuff. So yes, we'll be releasing libraries, simulators, the mechanical specs, and including the mechanical specs, the shape of the artwork and all that stuff. Any other questions? I think I'm about out of time. One more question? No questions? Someone's got a question.
How many are buying?
We got one buyer. Woohoo!
Hey,
thank you. It's one more than we had before. Thank you. All right. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.